Is Jamie and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you're new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you're new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual awakening, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while speakers share it. Also in the chat, you'll find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distraction. Breakout room discussions at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I forgot to ask someone to read 12 steps. John, would you like to read the 12 steps for us?
I don't actually have, hold on a second. Let me just go get it on my phone. You'd think I'd know it off by heart by now.
You probably do know it by heart there, John, but I'll do it if you
Do
want
you
to take
mind?
the
I'm
stress
having a
off
bit of
yourself.
trouble finding it. Would you mind doing that? Yeah. Sorry.
I'm Sunny and I am an alcoholic. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested in the program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you for reading, Sunny. Today we will hear a talk on step 12. Please give a warm welcome to Shelby from Port Orchard, Washington.
Good morning. My name is Shelby, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank Sunny for inviting me. I don't usually get to do things at this time on a Friday because John and I were talking earlier about how 20 years, like having you know, my husband always says that 1 year takes longer than, you know, the 20 years since then. And so, and he had mentioned like not wanting to be a newcomer again. And I was thinking that one of the things that reminds me of being a newcomer is that I work I'm a middle school teacher. And so that's like being a newcomer every day. So anyway, and being a teacher is one of the huge blessings of being sober. I did not become a teacher until I became sober. And so, I don't know, I have the heart of a 13-year-old that lives inside of me. That's when I started drinking. And that's about the age that I acted, behaved, and felt like by the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on January 6, 1998. So I don't know. I feel like, I know what my students are getting ready to do before they do it, because I'm like, oh, I'm like, you are me and I am you. And there is my heart right there. So, you know, I had a student last year who I take my students on this big trip every year for the last 5 years, minus the COVID year, because everything is minus the COVID year, down to Olympia, which is our nation's capital. And we go to debate at the Capitol, and I teach my students how to debate. I teach them about government. So I take a group of last year 40 eighth graders down to Olympia. And so one of my boys brought weed into class, and you could smell it in his backpack. And so I pull him, he ends up getting suspended. He got busted later on in the day with it, but I knew he had it. I could smell it. My principal came in, he's like, I can't smell it. And I'm like, it's in the backpack. I know it. Right. And so I don't usually tell my students that I was suspended in eighth grade for drinking. But after he got back from suspension, I took him, I pulled him to the side and I said, hey, I said, you know, we need to talk, because I can't take you to Olympia. We have something called SAD TV. It's an acronym. It's no sex, no alcohol, no drugs, no tobacco, no violence. And then one of my kids says, what about vaping, Mrs. Barreto? What about vaping? You know, we don't smoke, we vape. And I'm like, okay, too much information. I said, we can add a second V on the end of SAD TV. And so I told him, I said, you know, you practice SAD TV, you brought, you know, you brought weed into the class. And he's like, only once. And that just sounds like so much like me. Like, I only did it once. Twice, three times a lady. Like, I was constantly doing something more and more and more and more, right? And so I told him, I always tell my students I was suspended in eighth grade. I don't tell them what for. But I did tell him that day, because I thought, you know what? We do it in AA, right? We tell our stories in hopes that we can help other people to find what we have found here, right? Like, who knew that my story was going to become my greatest asset? This tragic, demoralizing ridiculousness that I lived from 13 until 27. Who knew that that was going to become like the best thing that I have, right? Not the bachelor's degree, not the master's degree, not the marriage, not the child, but the story that I get to tell others, right? So I told him, I said, hey, I said, you know, I tell you, I got suspended in eighth grade. And he's like, yeah. And he won't look at me. He's doing all that, like sucking his teeth and looking up in the air and, you know, big hands. I'm a big hands person, so I get it. And so I said, you brought weed into our classroom. I said, you practice SAD TV. I said, I can't take you to Olympia if this is what you're doing. And I said, look, I said, you know how I tell you I got suspended in eighth grade? And he's like, yeah. And he still won't look at me. And I said, it wasn't for bringing weed into the classroom. I said, but it was for doing something else you have to be 21 in order to do. And he's like, drink. Then all of a sudden he makes eye contact with me. He's like, drinking? I'm like, you said it, buddy, not me. Like, I'm not going to tell you I was drinking at school as the teacher. I said, but he said it. So I was like, okay. I said, so look, I said, so what I know is that the choices that we make today will dictate the path that we walk down tomorrow. That is the thing that I know. And I said, in the choices that I made at 13, when I decided that drinking at school was the appropriate course of action at 8 o'clock in the morning out of a hairspray bottle so that I could be busted right out the gate for being the most obvious child who's trying to drink at school. It was just astounding that that story was able to make him make eye contact with me, soften him up, and he did not bring weed into my classroom, and I was able to take him with us, right? Because we have this thing, right? Last night I was at a meeting and we were talking about, right, that step one, right, that powerlessness over alcohol. And it's like, if I'm powerless, that means that I have the illusion of power when I'm drinking, right? I have this really demented illusion and delusion. I'm not in denial. Denial is not the word that we use in AA. I'm under a delusion that my drinking is okay, that the way I live is okay, you know? And, prior to January 6, 1998, I was 27 years old, sitting at the table at my mom's house where I lived again because I had to beg to come home because I was living in a fifth wheel next to somebody's house with no electricity and a pet rat. And this is not how I was raised. This isn't how my mom and dad thought that my life was going to turn out. But there I was, drinking myself to death one day at a time. Those were my mom's words. She said, I cannot wait till you, my mom has fraught the emotional appeal, right? It says it seldom suffices. She's not an alcoholic. She's just a mom who's trying to figure out how to get her daughter to not be drunk every single day. And she said, I can't wait till you have children so they can grow up to become alcoholic so that you can watch them drink themselves to death. Like I have to watch you. Oh, that's a little harsh, you know, but she doesn't know what to say to me. She doesn't know what to say, right? And I'll tell you that my son is sleeping right now. He's 9 years old, and he is a miracle baby as a direct result of letting go and letting God. And I'll tell you that my mom watches him pretty regularly. She has since he's been born, and there's no part of me that thinks that that woman wishes alcoholism on our son. But she just didn't know what to do or say. And so as I sat at that table, it was right after the new year. I tore it up all over the holidays. So this is kind of that reflective time of the year, right? That 25 years ago, like I was just burning down the holiday season. And she said, Shalabi, and I was drunk because I'm always drunk because I do not draw a sober breath from 21 to 27. I am insanely intoxicated every single day. And she says to me, you need to get a job. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. And she's like, and you need to go back to college. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. And she's like, and you need to not be drinking. And oh, my God. And I just remember sitting there thinking like, okay, I said, but man, if I'm not drinking, my life is really going to suck. I'm not going to have any friends and I'm not going to be funny. And she said, Shalabi, it is very sad if you think that alcohol has made you the person that you are, because if anything, it's taken that person away. And second of all, you have not been funny in a very long time. And I'm like, oh, my mom was so fast. She would just say those things that would just like, just dig. And so I told her, okay. And so I didn't drink for 2 days, 2 days. 2 days was as long as I could go without drinking. The madness of alcohol was on me. And all I did was obsess for those 2 days. And I was bitter and I was angry and I was stomping around that house and biting off anybody's head who would say anything to me. And I drank on that third day. And the next morning, I wasn't supposed to be drinking, right? I said I wouldn't, and my sister tattled on me. So I'm sure I'm going to get put on restriction, and I'm going to be busted. And again, right, I think, talk, and act like a child, like the teenager that I was when I got suspended in eighth grade. You don't get busted, and you don't get on restriction. They kick you out of the house when you're 27. Nobody wants you there. And And so I, the next morning I get up and my mom knows I've been drinking. Everybody knows I've been drinking. And so I don't know what I said, but I'm sure it was something sarcastic and dripping with contempt. And from the other room, I hear my mom screaming for me to get out of her house. Get out. And she said, and I want you to take everything with you because I do not want you think that you, I don't want you to think you have any reason to ever return to this house. And I was like, fine. And I don't have anywhere to go. Like, I don't have, and I sat in that room and I packed a bag and then I unpacked it. And I had what the book describes as a jumping off place where you can't see your life with alcohol and you can't see your life without it. And I went out into the kitchen and I told my mom I would go to AA and I was crying. And so now my mom is crying. So you know what that means. She's going to let me stay. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm going to get sober and all of a sudden I become all altruistic. Like I'm still manipulative. I don't really want to go. I don't know what else to do anymore. Right. And what I did that day is I took some action and I believe that action is what changed the course of my entire life, right? The actions that I took that day would dictate the path that I would walk down next. And I called my friend Meg and she was sober for almost 2 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to drink with her. And while we were drinking together, she would tell me about, I'd be like, hey, while you're up, grab me a beer and tell me about AA. And I would make her talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous because I knew I was an alcoholic and I knew that the way that I drank was absurd and disgustingly and dangerously antisocial. Like I knew that. I knew that for years. Nobody had to tell me that, even though everybody told me that. But I knew. And so I, what I did next is I picked up the phone and I called Meg and I left a message on her answering machine. And the 12 steps started that day because she called me back. And she told me later that the only reason that she called me back is because she thought something had happened to someone in my family. I don't even think I identified myself. I think I was like, you know, we're not home right now. And I'm like, I need you to call me. And I sounded like this insane, distraught, like something tragic has happened. And it has, right? I'm asking for help, you know, and whenever we ask for help, it's always in this, like everything is so dramatic, right? My entire drinking life was, oh my God, guess what? And then I could tell you all about what Terry was doing and what John was doing. And then Meg would be like, well, how are you doing? And I'd be like, because I don't know how I'm doing. I can't tell you what and how I'm doing. I can only tell you that, all the things that other people have done and, you know, to take the attention off of me. And so she called me back and, you know, because her sponsor gave her direction that she was supposed to let me go and pray, I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe the actions I took that morning and Meg's prayers brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And so I said, I need to go to a meeting. And she was like, oh, I'll pick you up tonight. And I was like, oh, that's so fast. You know? And I'm so grateful. It was like, I need help. Hey, they're at your door. How'd you get here so fast? Like how, you know, cause I don't know. She's been waiting for me. She has been waiting for me for almost 2 years. I was the last person that she drank with. And she was being 12-stepped to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous that night that we drank together. And I didn't know what any of that even meant. And so I'm so grateful that I didn't have any quippy thing to say. I didn't, you know, I just thought, oh, that's so fast. I don't know what to do. And instead I just said, okay. I just said, okay. And from that day to this, I just say, okay. You know, because my life has been completely, you know, when it talks about, you know, like that God has recreated my life. Like it's crazy. You know, we were talking about that last night, like Alcoholics Anonymous is super weird. It's not conventional in any way. it's not this thing where you're like, yes, like, I don't know how many people on this meeting, like how many people have had to listen to people over and over again, still trying to find this synthetic way. Like they would rather take a pill than take the steps. They would rather go to the doctor and have the doctor tell them that something is wrong with them and here's what's going to fix it, instead of us being like boots on the ground, letting you know, like, hey, this is it. There's some work you have to do. And it entails like a paper and a pencil. And you're like, what? I can't, what an order. I can't go through with it. You know, and my friend Brenda says that all the time. Like, we will do anything but AA. We'll do anything but AA. Please do not make me, you know, do the inventory. Oh my gosh, I don't want to have to tell people I'm sorry for being such an asshole my entire drunk and sober life. God forbid I tell somebody I may have been wrong, you know, and let alone the time suck that it is to have to work steps with other people. Oh my gosh, that was the thing I hated the most about step 12. Oh my gosh, I have to go and put aside hours worth of my day to go sit with someone. The same hours that my sponsor took with me to take me through the steps, all of a sudden my selfishness and my self-centeredness comes into play, and I don't want to do the same thing for others, right? Because it's just too much. You know, my time, you know, and it's really interesting because only over the last couple of years have I changed my prayer to thanking God for inviting me into his day, for giving me another day of sobriety and another day with him instead of me inviting him into my day. You know, how dare I? How arrogant am I? God, I'm going to go ahead and invite you into my day. Really? It's taken me 20 plus years to believe that this is not my day and this is not my time, you know, to really feel that 11 step prayer, that St. Francis prayer, that it truly is better to love than to be loved, to understand than to be understood, to comfort than to be comforted, to bring that joy and that light and that hope and that faith to other people, like to really want that to be. And it's not that I haven't been practicing that. I have been practicing that my entire sobriety. And I have wavered and I have failed. And I have gotten back on the beam in order to just redouble my efforts, if you will, right? Because there are times where I know other people that have been like, I have been sponsored my entire sobriety. I have not. I didn't tell you when I wasn't being actively sponsored. I didn't tell people that I'm really without sponsorship. I just avoid and evade that topic altogether because I don't want, you know, nobody wants to listen to you if you're unsponsored. Nobody's going to take your direction if you're not sponsored, you know, but I just won't mention it. Then, you know, they're not going to know. Everybody knows. Everybody can tell. They can tell the way you behave in a meeting. You sit in the meetings with the same people day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year. People know you. That's why we go to the same meetings every week. Same group of people. So that when you're like lying and telling people, no, everything is fine. And they look at you and they know it's not. They know it's not. You know, and I'm so grateful, you know, that morning of January 6th, it was probably more like afternoon because Shelby was not getting up in the morning to after being drunk all night. I'm sure it was the afternoon. And she said, I'll pick you up tonight. And she really put that 12th step into action for me. And she showed up my house and she picked me up for my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she took me to this group called the We Care group. It met at 7:30 on Tuesday nights. It was a Tuesday night. And we got there and Meg was introducing me to everybody. This is Shalaby. She's new. This is Shalaby. She's new. And I was like, why is she telling everybody I'm new? Because I had taken a shower that day because I hadn't been bathing very regularly. And I put on my makeup mask and I curled my hair and I did all these things that I hadn't done in a really long time. My friend DeAndre called it dressing up my trash can for my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't want you to know I was new and I didn't know that you could look at me in the dead vacancy within my soul through my eyes to see that I was new. And Alcoholics Anonymous gives us that spirit back. That's why people always say that when they say, you know, we can see it. We can see it in the people that are sober. You know, there was a little gal last night at the meeting who was talking about those of us with time, you know, and she was like, she's like, there's something about you. She was just sharing, but she was looking at me and my long-timer friend. We sit together on Thursdays. And I know she was looking at the two of us because we have time sober, right? And she was just saying that there's just an ease and a comfort, right? That same sense of ease and comfort that came at once from taking a few drinks. This woman recognizes that she can see it in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And I don't know. I left the meeting that night. You know, the topic that night was what it used to be like, what happened and what it's like now. And I think that that's the most important three things that we can tell people when they come into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because first of all, like, I feel like we have to know where people come from to see where they've come to, you know, to see how far we've come. And in these last 25 years, you know, I was telling John, you know, congratulations on the 20 years, like 25 years is a long time without a drink. And the madness of King Alcohol is not on me anymore. And I'm not having to like trudge through every day and this like toiling, you know, it's just not even like that. My life really is that thing that it talked about in the reading about, you know, like frequent contact with newcomers will become the bright spot of our lives. I mean, who knew that that was going to be the thing that would really revolutionize my whole attitude and outlook upon life, would be to see people change, to see them grow, to see this fellowship grow up around them. You know, I have the pleasure of sponsoring, I don't know, probably half a dozen women. And they really are, you know, the bright spot in my life. You know, my home group members, I have an excellent, excellent home group. So we live in Washington. We used to live in California, and we moved up here 7 years ago. And the year before we moved here, we were up visiting because my dad and my sister, both already lived in Washington. And I don't know how other people roll, but we are, we go to meetings when we're on vacation, we go to meetings out of town, and we were up here visiting. And so I'd heard this guy announce this new meeting, ironically called the Bright Spot. And I tell my husband, I get home from this meeting and I said, hey, there was this guy and he was talking about this meeting called the Bright Spot. He's like, oh my God, I heard that guy at a different meeting. We should go. Like, cause it has to be God, right? Like how did, you know, we don't know this person. And so we go to the meeting and it was one of those meetings that when you left the meeting, you probably needed a meeting. Like you're like, oh, was that an AA meeting? Oh, like I could use a meeting after that meeting. Like it was rough and no singleness of purpose. It was really, I used to say it was one of the worst meetings that we ever went to, but it really wasn't. It was one of the best meetings that we ever went to because we met this couple, Crystal and Harley, and we're out in the parking lot after the meeting talking to them. And they said, yeah, you know, we've been trying to support this meeting. It's not good. Like we know it's not good. They said, but you should come to our home group. And so they invited us to Port Orchard Alcoholics Anonymous. And so we went there the next day. And Port Orchard Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, if you're ever out our way and you come to visit, we meet 6 days a week. And Saturday night is a big speaker meeting. And this was a Thursday, so it was just a regular, you know, participation. We have literature-based participation meeting that night. But it was one of those, like, when you walked up the walkway, it was summer, so it was still light outside, and it was warm. It was a beautiful Washington day. And the buzz and the hum of Alcoholics Anonymous was felt as soon as you walked up between styrofoam cups and cigarettes, right? You know, it was like you could just feel that, like that you could hear it, you could feel it, it was palpable, you know? And it turns out we had people in common down in California that some of their home group members knew. And when we went back home for one more year, and for a year for me as a school year. And then my husband said, you know, let's move. And so we had a home group before we ever had jobs and a place to live. We had a home group, and Port Orchard Alcoholics Anonymous, when we moved to Washington, they just wrapped their arms around us and just pulled us in, you know, and we have this amazing group, and, you know, I'm in charge of a unity celebration for New Year's, and I haven't been feeling well. And I felt like I'd kind of not dropped the ball, but I just hadn't really picked up the ball and ran with it, you know? And so, because I have 25 years of sobriety, and I think it's just as important that I have commitments at the meeting, just like my girls do, just like the other home group members do. And I have commitments at meetings, you know, because of what I've done in step 12, I have affairs in which to practice these principles in, but I only have those affairs if I continue to do the work of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I continue to have commitments myself. And last year I was the bell ringer. I rang the bell on Saturday nights, and I'm sure that there are plenty of new people that keep not taking that commitment. Oh, I'm gonna ring the bell. And then we never see them again. I'm gonna ring the bell. And people just keep handing me the bell. I haven't had that commitment for a year, but they just keep handing me the bell. And I think ringing the bell is just as important as secretarying the meeting. I think that doing the jobs of Alcoholics Anonymous is just as important as any other job. And I know there are people that don't think that sitting by the back door to make sure that the speaker meeting isn't disruptive is not a real job. They're jobs. They're jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous that keep the meeting running. And I heard a speaker once say that commitments were God's way of keeping us busy while he fixed us, you know? And so he's still fixing me. I still need fixing. And, you know, I just screamed at my mom, like 2 months ago, like lost my mind up in here. I do not know what in my mind, I think I'm spiritually fit. I have commitments. I do step work. I am sponsored. I'm actively sponsored by a woman named Nancy Cook down in Downey, California. Who I got during the pandemic, who I did not meet for a year and a half until we came back face to face, and I went to California to meet her. Like, I did not know her, but I heard her twice on Zoom in a week. Once at PG and once at Bellflower. And within short order, I'm on the phone seeking her out because I need to be sponsored because I'm going to divorce my husband. Not sure why, but I'm gonna, right? Not sure why, but I'm going to. Like, I am done, and this is done, and we are done. But there is just so yesterday, a girl that I sponsored for many years who just informed me, I haven't sponsored her for a little while, but she just informed me that she has no intentions of stopping drinking. I'm the only person who knows. And I said, okay. And she is a keep coming back. She comes back drunk. She comes back sober. She will not do an inventory. She will not make amends. And because of those things, she just keeps cutting herself off. She's still part of the debating society. And I'm not part of the debating. My debate is up. I do not, you know, quibble over, is it God or AA or AA or God? I don't know. They're synonymous. They go together. I can't have one without the other. That is what I know. Right. So she told me just recently, she said, I haven't told anybody else. She said, but I'm telling you, you know, she trusts me. And for a long time, I didn't really understand when people would say, right, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous on January 6, 1998, and I didn't leave. I came into AA, not through rehab, not through treatment, not through court, just came into AA, and I haven't left. And so I don't have the experience of going out or being on the fence or not being all in, right? I'm almost done. I know I saw my time's up. Thank you, Jamie. So I don't know what it must be like for her. I think it must be really hard. I think it must be really difficult for her to sit with us day in and day out and still be on the fence about what this thing could truly do for her. She sees it happen for the rest of us. I just can't imagine, right? But she texted me yesterday and it kind of prompted me to send out some messages about Sunday, the event we're having is on Sunday, you know, and my home group just comes through. They just come through in this big way. And everybody's like, what can I do, Shalabi? What do you need me to do? What are we going to do? And that's it. The event will take care of itself as it does in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, just real quick, I just wanted to read, this is my favorite part of, we read it on Saturday nights at our speaker meeting. It says, there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence in which we had not even dreamed. And everything about Alcoholics Anonymous, again, it has completely changed everything about my life. And I live a big, huge life as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous and practicing these principles in all my affairs and all the things that AA can do to us and for us, and God can do to us and for us. So thank you guys for having me. Thank you, Sunny.
Thank you very much, Reach.